Welcome to the Black Mass. Tonight, a story we did on the Black Mass over 2 years ago. We were just beginning the series then, and compared with some of our later work, you may find this one a little primitive. But it was a favorite at the time, and we'll give it a final run through this evening. Here is The Score by Bram Stoker.
My wife and I had been on the second week of our travels through Germany when Elias P. Hutcherson, hailing from Isthmian City, Bleeding Gulch, Mapletree County, Nebraska, became one of our party. The train ride from Frankfurt had been enjoyably colored by the racy remarks and observances of our transatlantic friend, his quaint speech and wonderful stock of adventures. Was sometimes a weird counterpart to a terrain and tradition so remote from his own. His destination, and ours, was the ancient city of Nuremberg. His sole motive was to view at last the device of torture modeled in the form of an iron virgin. This faithful romance had begun years ago in Bleeding Gulch, where Elias P. Hutcherson had imagined gory scenes of torture as he pored over a small etched illustration of the famous virgin in Harper's Weekly. On the day appointed for our visit, the three of us strolled around the outer wall of the city by the eastern side. The burg itself is seated on a rock dominating the town, and an immensely deep moat guards it on the northern side. The ditch has not been used for centuries, and now its base is spread with tea gardens and orchards. A little to our right rose the towers of the burg, and nearer still, standing grim, the torture tower, which was and is perhaps the most interesting place in the city. For centuries, the tradition of the Iron Virgin has been handed down as an instance of the horrors of cruelty of which man is capable. We had long looked forward to seeing it, and here at last was its home. As we wandered around the wall, we paused now and then to look down into the moat. The garden seemed quite 50 or 60 feet below us. The July sun was hot, and we were lazy. We lingered, leaning on the wall. Amelia was the first to catch sight of the great black cat.
It was just below us, lying stretched in the sun, while round her played a tiny black kitten. The mother would wave her tail for the kitten to play with, or push playfully with its paw.
They were just at the foot of the wall, and Elias P. Hutcherson, in order to help the play, stooped and picked from the walk a moderate-sized dog.
Hey, let's just have a little fun with them critters. We'll scare them. I'll drop this stone here, right near the kitten. They won't even know where it came from.
Be careful, Mr. Hutcherson. You might hit the little thing.
Oh, not me, ma'am. Well, I was tender as a lame charity. Lord bless you. I wouldn't hurt the poor, pretty little critter more than I'd scalp a baby. She's just a laugh on that. See? Oh, I'll drop it far away on the outside of the deer. So it's not to get me out.
Thus saying, he leaned over and held his arm out at full length and dropped the stone. It may be that there is some attractive force which draws lesser matters to greater. Or more probably that the wall was not straight but sloped to its base, and that we could not see the inclination from above. But the stone fell with a sickening thud that came up to us through the hot air right on the kitten's head, and shattered out its little brain then and there. The black cat cast a swift upward glance, and we saw her eyes like green fire fixed an instant on Elias P. Hutcherson. Then she turned to the kitten, which lay still with just a quiver of her tiny limb, whilst a thin red stream trickled from a gaping wound. With a muffled cry, such as a human being might give, she bent over the kitten, licking its wounds and moaning. Suddenly she seemed to realize that it was dead, and again threw her eyes up at us. I shall never forget the sight, for she looked the perfect incarnation of hate. Her green eyes blazed with lurid fire, and the white sharp teeth seemed to almost shine through the blood which dabbled her mouth and whiskers. She gnashed her teeth, and her claws stood out stark and at full length on every paw. Then she made a wild rush up the wall as if to reach her. But when the momentum ended, fell back, and further added to her horrible appearance.
She's fallen on the kitten. Oh, Richard, it's horrible. Her black fur smeared with the kitten's blood. I can't bear the sight of it. I can't bear it.
Amelia turned quite faint and staggered away. I helped her to a stone seat across the walk and remained with her till she had composed herself somewhat. Then I went back to Hutcherson, who stood without moving, looking down, transfixed, on the angry cat below him.
Well, I guess that it is savagely beat out at you. Sit once. Once when an Apache squaw took it out on a half-breed named Splinter. Splinter. We're named him that cause of the way he chopped up her papoose. The Apaches had put his own mother to the fire torch the time before. He showed his appreciation of that in a private way. And he got hold of his squaw's baby. And he hacked it to bits before her eyes. I saw the whole thing. Savage against savage. Squaw got that kind of look. Like that cat down there. On a face so set that it just seemed to grow there. Yeah, she followed Splinter more'n 3 years. The last of Patrick Grace got him and handed him over to her. Yeah. They say that no man, white or Asian, I've never been so long a dying under the torture of the Apache. The only time I ever see that squaw smile was when I aimed my gun at her head. Yeah, we got there too late anyway. Splinter's already passed in his chips. He wasn't sorry to go either, you can bet that. That squaw smiling at me. Thought she'd get me too, same way if she could. My gun tore her head apart. Still see that look sometimes. Same look as that cat down there. Same look.
Whilst he was speaking, the cat glared up at us, silent, listening fiercely to the story. Then suddenly, she continued her frantic efforts to get up the wall. She would take a run back and then charge up, sometimes reaching an incredible height. She did not seem to mind the heavy fall which she got each time, but started with renewed vigor, and at every tumble her appearance became more horrible.
Well, now, I declare, that poor critter's really taken it to heart. Well, that poor thing was all really an accident, you know. I guess that won't bring your little one back to you, will it? Well, now, you know, I wouldn't have had such a thing happen if anything in the world. That just shows what a clumsy fool of a man can do when he tries to play. Say, Colonel, I hope your wife don't hold no grudge against me on account of this unpleasantness.
But of course, Mr. Hutchinson. I quite understand that it was an accident. I'm afraid, though, that it quite shook me for the moment.
Then we all went back again to the wall and looked over. The cat had drawn back across the moat, sitting on her haunches as though ready to spring. Indeed, the very instant she saw Hutchison, she did spring, and with a blind and unreasoning fury which would have been grotesque, only that it was so frightfully real.
Oh, Richard, that cat frightens me. She leaped just then as if hate and fury could lend her wings. Mr. Hutchison, you must be very careful. That animal would try to kill you if you were up here. Her eyes look like positive murder.
Oh, excuse me, ma'am, but I can't help laughing. Imagine a man that has fought grizzly bears and Apache Indians being worried about a mad cat.
Finally, we moved on our way around the city moat. Every now and then, we looked over the wall, and each time we saw the cat following us. At first, she was carrying the dead kitten in her mouth. After a while, however, she abandoned this, evidently hid the body somewhere, and was following us alone. We crossed the little wooden bridge leading to the gateway, whence ran the steep paved roadway between the Berg and the pentagonal torture tower. As we crossed the bridge, we saw the cat again, down below us.
Thank God it can't follow us any further.
Yes, I'm kind of relieved about that myself. Now, goodbye, old girl. Really sorry about all this. All right, you'll get over it in time. You'll get over it. So long.
And then we passed through the long, dim archway and came to the gate of the Berg. During our survey of this most beautiful old Gothic place, we seem to have quite forgotten the unpleasant episode of the morning. The old lime tree, with its great trunk gnarled with the passing of nearly 9 centuries. The deep well, cut through the heart of the rock by those captives of old. And the lovely view of the city, whence we heard the multitudinous chimes of Nuremberg, all helped to wipe out of our minds the incident of the slain kitten. Finally, we crossed the paved roadway again and entered the torture tower. Truly a grim place. The dust of ages seemed to have settled on it, and the darkness and the horror of its memory seemed to have become sentient. The lower chamber, where we entered, was seemingly in its normal state, filled with incarnate darkness. Even the hot sunlight streaming in through the door seemed to be lost in the vast thickness of the wall. The custodian, looking to us as the sole source of his gains for the day, was willing to meet our wishes in any way.
You are the only difficult today. You see, you have the place all to yourself. And if you are interested, we can make a more minute and satisfactory survey than would otherwise be possible. Your eyes will get used to the darkness in a few moments. Please, if you will follow me.
The walls were coated with dust and marked here and there with patches of dark stain, which, if walls could speak, could have given their own dread memories of fear and pain. We were glad to leave the hall, and when we came up through the open trap in the chamber overhead, Amelia held on to me so tight that I could actually hear her heart beat. I must say for my own part that I was not surprised at her fear, for this room was even more gruesome than that below. There were ranges of windows of medieval smallness, but so high up that from no part could the sky be seen through the thickness of the wall. Dim, at
Time's hardly more than a shadow in this ancient life. The old custodian directed us about his deadly chamber.
Those cracks against the wall. Notice in them the door. The excellent door.
Great double-handed weapon with broad blade and keen edge. Nearby were several blocks whereon the necks of the victims had lain.
Ah, please. Notice there the deep notches where the steel has bitten through the flesh and shored into the wood. And over here, the rat. The rat. And another smaller one over here. Here, the chair of spike. Here's the iron boot. Ah, and here, the steel basket in which the head of the victim can be slowly crushed to a pulp if necessary. Everywhere, racks, belts, boots, gloves, collars. All made for compression at will. Implements of torture. All modeled upon the simplest common objects. Clothing, household furniture. Objects which ordinarily bring some kind of comfort and protection. Here in this chamber of horror, molded as from a nightmare into objects which have turned savagely upon their pigs.
Horrible. It's all horrible. In this dim light, I can only see the victims. Their tortured faces. Hear their cries.
But it's all of another age, Amelia. Long, long past. These are only skeletons. Deadly remains. In mind.
Question that. In this twilight, they seem still to live. Biding their time. Waiting. There is about them a hushed, gruesome expectancy. Richard, where is Mr. Hutchison? He was with us just a moment ago.
He had left us just a moment before, heading toward the center of the chamber. And we saw him there now, standing transfixed before a great dark object to which the custodian now led us.
But the central object of this whole chamber of horrors is this engine known as the Iron Bertrand, which stands here in the center of the room. It is, you see, a rudely shaped figure of a woman, hardly recognizable as intended for a human figure at all, but not the founder, shaped on the forehead, a rude resemblance of a woman's face. The poor lady, so long abandoned, covered with crust outside, is still, however, in working order. Here, let me show you. You see here the rope fastened to the little iron ring at the waist of the figure, and drawn through a pulley fastened on the wooden pillar over here. Now, I pull the rope. So. The front section of the version opens like a door. And see the thickness of the iron wall of this dreadful machine. And inside, just enough room for one victim to be placed.
The door was of great weight, for it took the custodian all his strength, aided though he was by the contrivance of the pulley, to open it. This weight was partly due to the fact that the door was of manifest purpose, hung so as to throw its weight downward, so that it might shut of its own accord when the strain was relieved. The inside was honeycombed with rust. Nay more, the rust alone that comes through time would hardly have eaten so deep into the iron wall.
The rust of the cruel stain was deep indeed.
Oh, Richard, look. Look inside the door.
Indeed, it was only when we looked there that the diabolical intention was manifest to the full.
You see the long spike, broad at the base, sharp at the point, placed in such a position that when the door should close, the upper one would pierce the eyes of the victim, and the lower one his heart and abdomen.
Hutchison, still obsessed by this iron virgin, finally gave us the benefit of his thought.
Well, I guess I've been learning something here. Now, we used to think out on the plains that the engine could teach us just about everything on how to make a man uncomfortable. From here, though, seems we're a long way behind the times. Yeah, old Splinters and his squaw could have learned a thing or two to play on each other from this old world. You know, I wonder how it would feel standing in there. Room for just one. Kind of comfortable. Leaning back that way. Till you see the door and the spikes. You know, I can't help it. I just gotta do that. See how it feels in there.
Oh, no. No, it's too terrible.
Oh, now, ma'am, nothing's too terrible to the exploring mind. It's the danger that draws us to it. And I've been in some queer place in my time. Spent a night inside a dead buffalo once when the Comanches on a warpath. 5 days in a cave in the Billy Bronco gold mine in Mexico. No, I never yet walked me out on a crazy time. And I sure can't begin now, can I?
I could almost understand what Hutchison was trying to say. It was hard to draw one's eyes away from the terrible iron contact. The hollow shape, fitting the human form, had a strange, compelling effect. If one was not forced to turn away in horror, one was almost hypnotized, drawn into the dreadful mist to satisfy the lust of this iron woman. Why, I wonder, didn't I stop poor Hutchison while there still was a chance? Instead, I urged him to get through with the experiment. At first, the custodian was reluctant, but a small bribe from Hutchison gained his full cooperation. Hutchison wanted no detail overlooked that would add to the original experience. Consequently, the custodian produced some thin frayed rope and proceeded to bind our companion with sufficient thickness for the purpose. Half bound, Hutchison backed into the opening, which was just enough to hold him. Indeed, it was a close fit. And there, the custodian completed the task of binding the legs and feet together. The victim, now helplessly fit, had reached a state of almost macabre elation.
Well, there now. This here little woman don't leave much room to bustle in. Well, you take our coffin more room and move back it, I don't care. Now there, Judge. You just begin to let this door down. Easy like for me. I just want to feel how was those spikes kind of move toward their eyes.
Richard, stop him. Stop this. It's too terrible. I can't bear to see it. I can't.
But there was no stopping now. And Amelia, still holding me tight to my arm, shivered. Whilst the custodian began to slacken slowly, inch by inch, the rope that held back the iron door. Hutchison's face was positively raised as his eyes followed the first movement of the spike.
Oh, man, this is really it. Really it. I've had a show for a real pleasure like this since I left New York. No dodge rod, a tied out old continent, no bars, no Indians. Hey, go there, George. Don't you rush. I want a show for my money, I do.
The custodian must have had in him some of the blood of his predecessors in that ghastly tower. But he worked the engine with a deliberate and excruciating slowness. After 5 minutes, the outer edge of the door had not moved half as many inches.
But my attention was suddenly drawn to Amelia. Her grip had tightened on my arm. I saw her lips had whitened. She was looking not at the instrument of torture, but to a spot beside me.
Look there. The cat.
It was crouching almost out of sight beside the iron bird. Her green eyes shone fiercely in the gloom of the place, and their color was heightened by the blood which still smeared her coat and reddened her mouth. Her stare seemed to hold me silent for a moment. She looked like a triumphant demon. Her eyes flamed with wrath. Her hair bristled out till she seemed twice her normal size. Only when she turned for me to spring could I call out a warning. The cat! Look out for the cat! But at that point, with a sort of hellish scream, she hurled herself not as we expected at such a thing, but straight at the face of the custodian. Her claws seemed to be tearing wildly. And as I looked, I saw one of them hit the poor man's eye and actually tear through it and down his cheek, leaving a wide band of red where the blood seemed to spurt from every vein. Amelia had fainted in my arms, and holding her, I could do nothing to halt the terrible events before me. The custodian leaped back, dropping as he did so the rope which held back the iron door. The cord ran like lightning through the pulley block, and the heavy mass fell forward from its own weight. As the door closed, I caught a glimpse of poor Hutchison's face. It was frozen with terror. His eyes stared with a horrible anguish, as if dazed. And no sound came from his lips. The spikes had done their work. Happily, the end was quick. For when I wrenched open the door, they had pierced so deep that they had locked in the bones of the skull through which they had crushed. And actually tore him, it, out of his prison. And still bound as he was, he fell at full length, with a sickly thud upon the floor, the face turning upward as he fell. I rushed to Amelia and carried her out, for I feared for her very reason if she should wake from her faint at such a scene. I laid her on the bench outside, and then I ran back. Leaning against the wooden column was the custodian, moaning in pain as he held his reddening handkerchief to his eye. And sitting on the head of poor Hutchison was the cat, purring loudly as she licked the blood that trickled through the gashed sockets of his eyes. I think no one will call me cruel, but I seized one of the old executioner's swords and chopped her in two as she sat.
That was The Squaw by Bram Stoker. On our next Black Mass program, 2 weeks from tonight, we will continue our summer rerun with The Rat in the Walls by H.P. Lovecraft. And here is a brief coming attraction.
I heard voices, echoes, but above all that insidious scurrying. I felt them all around me. I was one of them, part of the ravenous army that feasts on the living and the dead. Well, why shouldn't rats eat at Villa Power, as a Villa Power eats forbidden things? No, I am not that demon in the twilight grotto. It's not Nari's body I tear apart. It's not blood I feast upon, and flesh. You faint and fear at what my family do. Blood, I'll stick it. I'll learn you how to blood. What is this wine can be filled white? Magna Mater!
That's The Rats in the Walls by H.P. Lovecraft, 2 weeks from tonight.